Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I am Scott Linden, your host. I hope you're having a great day, evening, middle of the night, whatever it is, wherever you're listening. That's the joy of podcasts. Great show in store for you today. I hope you are ready to learn something from our guest, George Hickox, columnist, dog trainer, and all-around good guy. In addition to George, we'll have a public access tip, some hunting strategy and dog handling advice, and a quiz and a prize. So if you are interested in any of that, then hang around with me and George and enjoy yourselves. Let's start with the most important part of the podcast, the folks who make it available to you, and that is Sage and Breaker. These are the folks who make the highest quality gun cleaning products and accessories around. Often they are packaged in wax, cotton, and leather, not just for looks, but because it's practical and great storage and transport items, as well as the highest caliber, pardon the pun, gun cleaning and gun care, everything from a bore cleaner to, well, the best gun cleaning, lubing, and protecting liquid spray that I've ever found, and I'll tell you more about that. The thing I like most is it's anti-magnetic, anti-static, and so all that crud that builds up, whether it's in your gun case or anywhere else, will not stick to the metal parts. Learn more and watch some of the videos at sageandbreaker.com. And our newest sponsor, ESPAmerica.com. Hearing protection, you know how strongly I feel about eyes and ears in the field as well as on the range. At ESPAmerica.com, it starts at $900, including custom fitting at a pro near you. Now, where were we? This is our second go-round. George, I appreciate your patience. George Hickox, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
And appreciate your patience. Those of you who didn't notice, had a little technical glitch, but here we are, and I am grateful to talk with George. Usually we talk for 60 seconds at the SHOT Show, and that's about it. And we never get past the puppy topic there. But you are somewhere far away for a very good reason. Tell me all about it.
Well, I'm in North Dakota right now. That's my summer training grounds. I train in Georgia during the winter. So I'm out here from May until, you know, end of October. So I'm in the boonies in North Dakota. I'm not here for the fine restaurants. It's because of the sheer number of wild birds.
And summer camp is something we all kind of hear about, read about, maybe even talk about once in a while. But most of us don't know what a pro trainer does during a summer camp up in the northern prairies. Give us a kind of an example of your typical day.
Well, they're long days. The day starts right before sunrise. We've got horses and dogs loaded in the trailer to go to whatever grounds we're going to be training on. Then we run dogs in the morning until the heat sort of drives us out, come back, maybe have a late brunch, breakfast, 11 to 12, and then the afternoon is spent in some sort of yard training, maybe point drills, pigeon drills, stuff like that. You know, the weather is usually really great. We don't have a lot of humidity, and the mornings are usually cool, even during the August time frame.
It must be tough keeping those dogs cooled down, especially as you get, like you said, into August, maybe September. That's a big issue for a lot of people, you know, all year. Right now, right for me, that's a problem. What are some of the things you do to ensure that the dogs don't get overheated?
Well, we're sort of blessed with the weather, really, the prairies. We don't have humidity. Mornings are usually in the, you know, high 40s, early 50s. I'm not saying we can't have some mornings in the 60s. You know, I'm in Georgia during the winter, so there you just can't be in Georgia training during the summertime. So really, the weather is just really conducive for us. We're just not running usually in the afternoon in the heat. But, you know, by September, it's turned cool again. So we're really blessed with weather, and that's one of the reasons that guys like myself spend the summers in the prairies.
Well, give us the lowdown on exactly what it is about wild birds on the prairie that is important to a young dog.
A really good question. One of the advantages of the prairies is the fact they're not going to catch birds. One of the problems with only training on a pen-raised birds with young dogs that don't have bird manners yet, they're going to catch some birds, and, you know, caught birds are, you know, accelerate more point. So they can't catch the birds, and they're going to get tired of chasing. Because of the number of birds that we have, you're able to always follow up a training session with another bird normally, and they can't catch them. So that's a big advantage. We still do pigeon drills, but by the time the dogs are running here, off horseback, they're just not going to catch them. And even with our walking dogs, which is the majority of my clients, they're walking hunters, we still start them off horseback so that we can get our handling and patterning in before we move to foot.
Tell me a little bit about the idea of being able to, the dogs learning here, because I'm living through it right now with my young dog, learning that they can't catch those birds. I mean, so how do you manifest that in your training? You just let them run or what?
In the very beginning, they're going to chase. They're going to bump and chase. What you'll see is the point starts getting stronger and stronger because they're not catching any birds. We're not shooting birds for them to get a bird in their mouth. So their point, with a genetically talented dog, is just going to get longer and longer. If they're catching birds, the point's going to get shorter and shorter. Okay, so the wild bird, they're just not going to catch it. And during the summer months, the birds are young, dumb birds. So you'll have repeat flushes. They're not all necessarily getting up at one time, which is great training. So you're just going to exaggerate your point before you go to your formal point drills. And, that's one of the advantages. Somebody can only use pen-raised birds. They have some different handicaps to, that they have to deal with.
Yeah, don't they? I mean, don't we? although there are ways that I'm working on to simulate that. And if you folks want to talk about that as well, I'm doing a lot of that kind of discussion on my blog at scottlindenoutdoors.com. George, just for the record, the bird species you're hunting or training on up there, sharp-tail grouse?
Sharp-tails, Hungarian partridge, and pheasants.
Oh, so you get a little mix of everything in there.
Yeah, we've got pretty good bird population here.
Yeah, off air we'll talk about your exact latitude and longitude, but until then, folks, just remember that George is the man, and you can learn more information about what he's doing in the world of seminars and buy some of the DVDs, et cetera, at georgehickox.com, H-I-C-K-O-X, georgehickox.com. George, your philosophy of dog training, if you had to boil it down to 25 words or less that would enlighten us and maybe change our way of thinking about how we deal with our own dog, what kind of direction would you give us?
Oh, that's a really good question. In addition to bird dogs, I also work with special forces dogs that get deployed. And what I tell people is that the learning is the same, but the task may be different. So I think a dog has to learn and can't all be pressure oriented. I'm not saying pressure is not part of the package, but it comes much later. So we're going to do our early yard training obedience work with positive reinforcement. We do a lot of clicker work first before we go to avoidance training, which is involving, whether that be e-collar or whatever correction that you're doing. So I think it's really important that the dog learns to learn. And one of the advantages of the clicker is the dog learns to solve his problems before somebody starts trying to get the command with compliance and compulsion. If it's compulsion, the dog didn't want to keep playing.
Yeah, it's funny. This comes up with almost every pro I talk with over the last few decades, and that is, the dog's got to teach himself to a great degree before you can actually, I'll use the term, guide that dog towards the desired behavior. How does that manifest itself in, let's just take the example we were talking about earlier about holding a point, being, steadiness. How would you explain that to us in that regard?
Well, we got to take the environment that I'm in. I'm in Georgia with a bunch of wild birds, on private quail plantations, and then obviously in the prairies. So we're going to start those puppies. I get a little puppy right now. He's 7 weeks old. She's 7 weeks old. The Etta Bolt, our two-time dog of the year. And every dog we have is going to start with the same type of program. We're going to start off with pre-released with quail, okay, that we've let out of a Johnny house just to imprint the dog on birds. One, that dog is now going out and questing for those birds, which should not take very long. I mean, I'm talking, a week or so.
Yeah, good that breeding and all that.
Yeah, now they're out hunting and they're looking for birds, and you're going to see them, flashpoint. and then they're going to chase. At that point for us, we're off the hen race birds for quite some time. And then we're doing other stuff, whether that be yard work or letting the dogs run off the four-wheeler, getting our patterning in, whether it's a walking dog or it's a horseback field trial dog, they can get our patterning in. And then when we're in the prairies, they're going to learn to hunt, but they're not going to catch those birds. When we see them pointing and they're questing, we're not looking at more birds is better. We're then going to go to, you know, our formal point drills. Although I don't think there's any badge of honor to have the youngest dog ever trained. I think everything is benchmarks. If anybody follows like college football, Nick Saban certainly had a glorious career. And one of the words he uses all the time is it's a process. And so is bird dog training. It's a process. You can't say, oh, I got to have it done by tomorrow. You know, your benchmarks is when the dog is ready, not because it's your time frame.
Yeah, and that is a real fault of many of us. You know, For years I threatened my next book would be a day-by-day, week-by-week list of the things you should be doing to train your dog, and then I realized it's different for everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, that's probably the easiest article to sell is a chronological Bible. When the dog is this age, you do this. When he's that age, he does that. It's like you couldn't put a kid in the 10th grade if he hadn't gotten through the 7th grade.
You know, I did write an article for Outdoor Life magazine a few years ago. They forced me to write one about a dog's first year. So I said, I'll write it, but I have to call it a dog's first year or so. And and was pretty nebulous about the time frames inside. You know, just because I got to scratch the itch, and we've talked a little bit about this over the years, but, you know, in a nutshell, without telling us anything you'll have to kill us for afterwards, what are you helping our special forces with?
Well, biggest thing is that the handler comes back home alive to kiss the baby and his wife hello.
Right on.
So the dog has a job to do, and the level of compliance, frankly, it's much greater than it is in our bird dog world. And if you think something just like gun shyness, I mean, we're looking at a dog not having a problem with a gun if there's a report of 4 or 5 shots, maybe. You know, you're looking at constant gunfire. Okay, and the other. So the environmentals are critical. You know, the training level is extremely high. You can't let you down.
Yeah, we hope not, and appreciate your service as well. And I'm sure those handlers are grateful to have a dog that's working with them too. You know,
saves lives.
Oh yeah, you name it. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the training business and your background and what you're doing the rest of the year.
Well, the rest of the year always involves dogs. Okay, you know, between the training and our clinics or one-on-one consultation. I grew up outside of Greenville, South Carolina, in a rural area back when Greenville was not a big metropolis. And there were a lot of small farms, and they had, you know, soybean patches and some farm and crops. So there were a lot of quail. So after school, in the days I didn't play hooky, I took a dog and I went chasing quail around. And that started early on in my life, and I just never looked back from it.
Lucky guy. So this time, you know, in your life, you got seminars, you got training in the summer, you got training in the winter. You actually get to hunt at all?
You know, I'm out with the dogs all the time.
Yeah.
Do hunt in, you know, probably in Georgia more than anything else. But when we're out, in my case, if I'm shooting a bird, it's for a training reason. You know, if I get to the pearly gates and St. Peter has feathers, then it's probably going to be an ugly interview. But, you know, the hunting portion for me, it's all about the dogs. Now, I have a lot of people who come to schools who then come out to North Dakota, say, in October and go hunting with me. But they're running their dog, and I'm there really more as a consultant than I am going out. If I have a busman holiday, sure, I take dogs, I go out, but more often than not, I have a starter pistol and not my shotgun.
I understand completely. I'm doing more of that on the TV show as well, and I'm enjoying it even more. You know, Steve Cinetti, who was at Ruger at the time, said once that at some point you get to the spot in your life where you have more enjoyment out of helping other people do it than you do get out of doing it yourself.
Well, it's funny you say that, because back in time when I was field trialing and we had come up a very successful few years, And I took some time off from trials for 2 years just to spend more time with my kids. And my friend, old Dave Meisner, who's, you know, he's dead mm-hmm. now, today, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't have an idea. I'm going to see my kids, but I don't know what I'm going to do if I'm not trialing. And he said, why don't you do a school? And I said, well, I've never done one. He said, why don't you do one? So I did one that he had set up for me, and I really enjoyed it. And if somebody had told me then that I had more badge of honor, so to speak, from helping somebody have more fun with a dog for the rest of their life than I would with a blue ribbon in trials, I would have said, you don't know me. But I guess I didn't know myself. The blue ribbon comes from Dave, from thank you letters from people sending me pictures that have been to school that are having success with the dog and more fun.
I love it. And of course, if you want to learn more about George's seminars, go to the website, georgehickox.com. There's a schedule there. I'm sure it'll be updated by the time we're on the air. Lots of great information there. George, I'm sorry you're not coming out to Oregon very often anymore for one of those. I never did pull it off and get to you when you were over by Prineville, for example, for a while. But I will someday, and it may be way up there in North Dakota because that's one of my favorite places as well. Hey, hang on for just a moment, and I will give a brief commercial interlude, and then we'll be back with a question for you in our Handle It segment, so hold tight. All right, and this is where we thank Dakota 283, the folks who make those incredible rugged dog crates, kennels, and storage gear of all sorts. There is all sorts of information at their website, Dakota283.com, if you'd like more information. And just a heads up, if you're buying one of their G3 kennels, you can get either a forever insert or a dine and dash free. This is one of those watertight, carry 2.5 gallons plus some dog food, never spills. You can store it. You can bring your dog's water from home instead of using somebody else's. Free when you buy a G3 kennel at Dakota283.com. For that one, the coupon code is LindenDD. Get it? Linden Dine Dash. If you'd like the forever insert, you know, you have a puppy and you don't want to buy 3 or 4 crates as they grow, the forever insert is just for you in the G3 kennel. That is LindenFI on the code at checkout. LindenFI. Dakota283, they got lots of new products coming along. They're all made in the United States. And they are about as rugged as you can get. And welcome to our new sponsor, ESPAmerica.com. Hearing loss is cumulative. If you're not wearing hearing protection on the range and in the field, eventually you're going to lose it, and it won't come back. That's the belief of me, Jack Homa, the owner of ESPAmerica.com, and a whole bunch of experts. My audiologist many years ago said there's a difference between listening carefully and hearing well. Ask my wife. If you'd like more information on these affordable in-ear, in-field, and on-range hearing protection devices, go to ESPAmerica.com. Theoretically, that is the cue for our next feature on the show, and lucky enough to have a great guy to answer this question as well. Handle It is the name of the feature, and George Hickox is our guest today. George, welcome back, and let's get started. You know, we talked a little bit about this earlier, and it seems to be something. I apologize in advance to everybody, because usually these subjects are subjects that I'm working on with Flick here in the yard. Wild birds are best, as we have learned from George and others as well. But if you don't have wild birds, George, how can we simulate that?
Well, I don't know that simulate's the right word with it, but I'll give you a drill that I think has worked really well. If somebody's in a situation where they can't really get their dog an encouraging point with wild birds. And that said, you're not going to finish. You're not going to, just because you ran in wild birds, you're not going to magically give you this dog who holds point, stay to wing and shot. It's just part of the process. But let's say somebody's not in a situation where they, you know, have wild birds. What I don't encourage is that every Saturday they just go out and they put some birds down and say, okay, we're training. What are we doing? You know, you're going to see the dog creep. You're going to see him take birds out. You're going to see him chase. And then the following Saturday is the same thing. Once the dog's been imprinted on birds, and he's comfortable with the flush and the gun's been done, then we use what's called a restrained chase drill. What we do is we use lockwing pigeons. That's the only bird we're using for this. And we'll put two or three birds, lockwing pigeons, in the same spot. Bring the dog in perpendicular to the scent cone. As soon as you see him, smell the bird, hopefully he points, but even if he didn't, and smell the bird, we're going to have somebody out in front of where the planted birds are, and we're going to, he or she is going to throw, or we're going to launch a bird with a remote launcher. The dog is going to chase. We've got the dog on a check cord. We're going to run with him. We're not jerking him back and stopping him. We're just going to run with him for, let's say, 10 yards. We're going to bring him back, and he reestablishes point, and then we're going to launch a second bird. So the birds that he's pointing are never the birds that are being flushed. So what happens after a while, he always anticipates there's going to be a second bird. The scent of the birds that weren't flushed and the scent cone is still there. That's going to help him hold point. And you're going to get a behavior of a dog standing there waiting for the second bird to come up rather than chasing and making somebody jerk his head off and, you know, maybe turn the dog sour or soft.
That is so insightful, and I hope everybody remembers it. Go back, play that part again when you're listening at home later tonight or tomorrow or every day for the next few weeks. That is incredible, and it is so true. If a dog is just not convinced that there's only one bird there, all of a sudden the switch is flipped, isn't it, George?
Yes, it is. And the problem with using the planted bird as a dog you're going to flush, you walk in front of him, you flush, you've now got a competition with the dog. And as soon as you start moving up, he starts to creep or take the bird out. So we're always having somebody in front, okay, when those birds being launched, but we're never flushing the scent birds. They stay there. And by having somebody in front, that's the picture he's going to see later when you're hunting. So many times somebody just stands behind him, jerks him, and makes him stand there, but he never got a picture somebody's going to be in front. So with those scent birds not being flushed, it's going to allow you to start walking around and kicking and giving him the pictures that he's going to need later during the generalization process to become a finished dog that points with style.
Love it. You know, you're talking about all this stuff that it sounds like you're enjoying the hell out of it, and so am I. I love every aspect of dealing with dogs except giving them a bath. But of all the stuff that you encounter, that you cause to happen, that happens anyway, or that you were in, you know, literally and figuratively involved in, what is the most gratifying part of it?
Oh, I'd say when either the dog's at field trial and he wins the championship. I mean, you take this dog, Bolt, we got 2-time dog of the year. He's had 16 championships. That's certainly gratifying to see a dog step up and, you know, maximize his genetic ability. Or if it's, you know, it's the gun dog that goes out and the guy had a great hunt. The dog, you know, found birds, hunted hard, pointed with style and class. You know, that's the blue ribbon.
Help us find our own trainer. If we can't go to one of your seminars or we want help on a long-term basis, a regular basis from somebody, how do we pick a good trainer for our own personal dog?
Oh, I'd say, you know, you got to go visit the person. Ask to see some dogs they've trained, get some referrals. You know, there's a lot of people who've got a piece of plywood at the bottom of the driveway with a can of white paint sprayed on there that says dog trainer. It's like any other business. Everybody's not equal. You know, so references and what type of grounds they have. I mean, do they have bird pens? They don't have birds. They're not going to be able to train a bird dog. You might have a set of golf gloves, but if you don't have golf balls, you're not going to be a golfer.
It sounds so basic, but it's scary how many people don't even dig that deep into their search for somebody who's going to mold your hunting partner for the next 10 years.
Well, you know, and another thing, think about the question you just asked me there, you know, price. You know, whatever area somebody lives in, let's just take, you know, because I grew up in South Carolina, so my math might not be that good. But let's say the boarding kennel charged $20 a day. And so if you left the dog there for a month, that'd be $600 just to board him. And you go to somebody and say, what do you charge to train my dog? And they say, you know, $400 a month. So that means they're going to be feeding birds, cleaning kennels, going out to train, amortizing their trailer or whatever equipment they've got, and they're charging less than a boarding kennel. You know, there's no great steals in it. If you know, I think that's really a case. If it's not enough money and the guy or gal can't make a living, you know, question it. How could they just charge that little? You know what birds cost? So if you needed pheasants for your training and somebody's paying $12 a pheasant and they say, okay, well, I've got, you know, a dog for a month, I'm going to get five birds. Well, they're not training.
Really. I mean, it is fundamental stuff. We just kind of look over that sometimes, and it scares me when I hear about that. You know, if we're training our own dog because we're too cheap or something, too stubborn is usually the bigger problem. What do you see most often in the way, whether it's your private clients or your seminar clients, when George Hickox goes somewhere and watches somebody work a dog, what's the biggest mistake they make?
Really good. Let's just take the clinics, because dogs are all over the board at different ages, different breeds. I would say the number one handicap is apprehension. You know, a dog comes in looking for something to be wrong, whether that was on a point drill or a new environment or other dogs or people, just that the dog is apprehensive. And usually that's environmentally made. And just like the blind shooting instructor can tell you why you missed, you're behind it. If the dog's not training well, so often it's because the dog is apprehensive. He doesn't have a solution to solve problems. And that apprehension is made more often than not because the dog got corrected when the dog did not know why. The owner knew why they corrected him, but the dog didn't have a clue.
You know, I talk a lot, whether it's in magazines and the books I write, but about how you need to kind of adjust your thinking and be more like a dog in your thinking so that those insights take place. If I were to ask you how a dog thinks, what would you tell me? Besides, roof, roof, roof.
Well, I think he's out to how does the world affect him, okay? I think it's about him. What pleases him, what's happening that's good for him or bad for him. And I think it's up to the trainer to guarantee the outcome and stack it to the advantage that the dog says, okay, these are good behaviors and these are bad behaviors, without being in a rush to teach the dog, here's all the bad behaviors that get you in trouble. Show him the good behaviors first.
You know, you used a term, and I stole it, and I probably quoted you in my book. You used the term paycheck, and that goes along with this whole philosophy of helping a dog succeed, for lack of a better term. Yeah, I've got a list of my own that I pay back my dog in many ways, you know, a dozen or 100 times a day. What are some of the things we may not have used that you think are important?
I think the two primary paychecks is going to be food. If the dog is hungry, food is a primary reinforcement. Okay. And birds, if it's a bird dog. So a good boy, I love you, a pet does not have the same motivation that seeing a bird go up or getting a piece of hot dog, so to speak. So I like to use paychecks that are meaningful and impressionable to the dog.
Man, so true. I'm learning more and more. My wife hates it, but there's a whole bunch of dead birds in my freezer. They get thawed out and they are used as the reward for so many other aspects of hunting related behavior, particularly steadiness and things like that. If you had to give us one bit of advice in terms of dog care, let's talk about dog care, because you're up there with it, you know, trailers full of dogs right now, and things happen to them, or you hope they don't happen to them, whether it's preventive or it's first aid or it's just dog care in general. What should we carry with us in our trailer and maybe even in our hunting vest just to make sure?
Okay. Well, you know, health always starts with nutrition and conditioning. You know, that aside, say you're feeding a tier one diet and you're properly conditioning a dog to make him an athlete. If you're in the field, a thermometer, what's the dog's body temperature? You know your dog, give him plenty of water beforehand. Heat is the number one, you know, killer of dogs in the country. So that's something that the owner can normally prevent. So keep him well hydrated, you know, hydrating before you go hunting, take frequent breaks, give him, you know, water there. If a dog is drinking lots of water, it's after the fact, he's already hot. Stop him from getting hot. That would be my number one piece of advice.
So we're out in the field. It's opening weekend in South Dakota. How do we know our dog is getting too hot if we don't have a thermometer with us?
Well, if the dog one, preseason conditioning is worth its weight in gold. Okay, so dogs that are in shape are going to handle it better than a dog that's been laying on the couch, so to speak, you know, and going out and somebody's going to try to hunt him all day. If the dog is, some dogs have so much drive for birds, they're not going to stop at a pond and get water. They're going to keep hunting. So I think, you know, preventive medicine is better than surgery, so taking frequent breaks. But if the dog is out and he's panting hard and it's, you know, his eyes are drooping, it's after the fact. He's already, you know, going towards overheating. So, you know, I think it's just being sensible, having common sense.
Which is not so common, is it?
No, for a lot of people, getting one more bird takes priority.
Scary thought.
Yep.
Tell me, we've talked all about dogs, dog training, all that sort of thing. Tell us something about George Hickox that we don't know.
Ooh, I don't know. That you don't know that I want you to know? Let's see. I'm a dog guy. I mean, that's what my whole life is. I mean, that's why I'm in Georgia during the winter. It's why I'm in the prairies during the summer. You know, my life is split between the training bird dogs and clients with their dogs, helping them, and military dogs. And that's pretty much of what I do.
Well, it could be worse. That's for sure.
I got a great offer.
If you were to leave us with one piece of advice about interacting with our dogs, so whether it's out while we're hunting or while we're training in the yard or in the training field, you know, give us the bumper sticker version of your advice.
I'd tell everybody to do clicker training with their dog, no matter what age the dog is at. Their timing of reward and then understanding for corrections later will be improved. The timing for giving a reward is exactly the same timing as administering a correction. It's better to learn it as a handler with positive reinforcement in the clicker. You're not using compulsion. It's going to foster team play, and a dog is going to learn. And I don't say that loosely. I say that it's very important. So I tell everybody, do clicker. Understand what it is. You know, there is going to have to be some pressures and corrections later. There's going to be a group of people in the clicker world that says you don't need pressure. That's not true with the bird dog. He's a predator in the field with his prey. Of course, there's going to have to be some corrections. It's when. So I would say learn clicker training, involve it in their training program. It'll create a one-on-one team play relationship with the dog.
Okay, I can't leave it hanging because this. I'm glad you brought up the clicker because there are a lot of people who are big believers now, and I just got a dumb question for you, George, and you've heard it before, and you probably have a really good answer. Why is a clicker better than just saying "good dog," which is handy, and you don't have to keep another thing hanging around your neck?
Well, okay, with the clicker, one, you can snap your fingers. I don't know if you can hear this, but you know, that would do the same thing. What the clicker is, it's neutral. It's non-emotional. It's unique and distinct. It means only one thing, good job, and you're going to get a paycheck. Your voice is not. It goes up and down in volume. You know, sometimes somebody baby talks the dog. Sometimes they raise their voice because they're angry. So it's not unique. It's not distinct. And you're saying all kinds of things and talking to the dog all the time. The clicker, it's just a marker that means one thing. Good job. What you did right now is going to get you a paycheck.
Well, that settles that. I'm going to have to go out and get one immediately.
And learn how to snap your fingers. We just start with the clicker, you know, in a sterile environment, you know, so an isolated thing, basement, garage, whatever. Okay, we're going to start with the clicker. But then, you know, I'm not walking around with a clicker around my wrist all the time either. But I'm not using my voice as the marker normally.
Well, that is a good enough argument for me. This whole idea of letting emotion rule our training strategy, it cuts both ways. Sometimes we're over the top on a positive standpoint, and sometimes it's the other way around. And I don't think we hear it most of the time. When I was learning to be a teacher, our teachers were showing us videos of us teaching. And so we learned a lot more about the subtleties and the nuances that came from that interpersonal relation. It sounds like that's a bigger deal in the dog training world than I ever envisioned.
Well, I think it's huge. One of our Bible rules, I have a thing called four curses, okay? And one of those curses is twice. I mean, by twice is saying the command twice. Hear, hear. You know, talking too much. So I think that, you know, your commands need to be unique, and I think they have to mean something, whether that's voice, whistle, you know, hand signal, whatever it is.
Give me the other three curses in a nutshell.
Well, it starts off with variable reinforcement. I'm talking about for corrections, that if the dog sometimes gets rewarded for a behavior you don't want and then sometimes corrected for it, that's variable. Okay, and that becomes like the gambling addict. Keeps going to the table, loses, loses, and loses. Why do they go back? Because they won once. So I think a variable reinforcement is really a killer as far as getting a dog to be compliant. Probably the number one variable reinforcement people do is let the dog have a retrieve before the dog was, you know, stay to wing and shot. Okay, or even if they're not going to make him stay to wing, just hold in point, because the dog got rewarded for leaving. So he gets $1 million paycheck for leaving. Well, then the balance scale has to go the other way, and that, you know, makes you have to put $1 million worth of corrections on him, and that's not a better way to go. Variable reinforcement for corrections, okay, twice, correcting or rewarding a dog when he doesn't know why. Dogs, or, you know, they learn by association. He's going to make some association, but if he didn't know why he got rewarded or corrected, he may make an association that the trainer did not want. And unfortunately, we don't have a delete button. It's not like the computer. We can hit delete and say, forget it, I didn't mean that. So I think it's really important that the handler trainer guarantees that the dog understood why he got a reward and why he got a correction. And the fourth one is no free lunch. We reward our dogs a lot. We reward them for giving us something. We don't reward them for not giving us anything. So those are it. Variable reinforcement for corrections, twice, free lunches, okay, and make sure that he understands why he got rewarded or corrected.
I am guilty as charged on all four counts, especially that last one. You know, every time you walk past your dog, he's just laying in the yard sunbathing, and you say, good boy. I mean, you're absolutely right. That just waters down everything else. It's kind of like kids today. But don't get me started on the blue ribbon for showing up.
You know, that good boy thing, one of the things that always sort of struck me funny. Somebody's got a lab, let's say, and they throw a tennis ball, a bumper for it. Dog's not trained. He goes out and he's standing over. He doesn't bring it. And they get out. Good boy. What the heck's he being a good boy about? He didn't even bring it to you. You know, so sometimes we just talk too much.
You know what? I'll leave you with this. Not that I can give George Hickox any dog training advice, but a lot of times people will come to me of all things, and I only play a trainer on TV, but they'll say, you know, he'll chase it. He'll bring the tennis ball back all the time, but then he won't, and then he will, and then he won't, and then he will, and then it's the same for the stick. And I'm saying, all right, well, just how about starting over again? Use a different word and use a different device if you really want them to be a pro about retrieving. Don't use any of the play stuff. Does that make any sense to you, George?
Absolutely. You know, you want your pictures to be succinct. I mean, you know, what are they? You know, so the dog is in a habit of doing the routine.
Yeah, well, for once, hey, maybe I said something right to the guy who says so many things right. GeorgeHickox.com is where you get more information on his seminars, on his DVDs, on his private training, and all the other things that you really need to learn more about. GeorgeHickox.com. George, we got to do this more often.
Hey, I enjoyed it. I hope that your listeners get something out of it. And I wish everybody, you know, great success and have a great, safe fall and straight shots.
Thank you very much. And back to the training. George Hickox, thanks again for being on the show. And now it's all up to me, and I sure appreciate your sticking with us. What a great guy. And I tell you, one of the things I'm really enjoying about this new podcast is the ability to talk to all of these folks I respect and admire at length, instead of those brief encounters at a trade show or as you're passing in the airport, which happens way too often. I hope you enjoy it too. And remember that when you're looking at podcasts, we're never, ever, I promise you, never going to insult your intelligence or waste your time. If you'd like to suggest a guest or be a guest, scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com is where you correspond with me. And speaking of correspondence, this is a fun one. Welcome to the This Land Is Your Land feature This was cooked up years ago on the television show, and I hope we can resurrect it there at some point. But in the meanwhile, I know everybody out there is looking for places to go, no pay to play, things to do that you can access simply by walking into them. One of my favorites, I don't get there near enough. I was invited there first by a fan of the TV show. Thank you, Mike, and have been back several times since. If you're a rough grouse hunter, head south of Duluth, Minnesota. In Douglas County, there is the Douglas County Forest, and the roughies are there in good numbers. I'm not going to give you the latitude and longitude, but I'm going to tell you that if you spend some time, invest some boot leather, you're probably going to find a bird or two. Hey, and you never know, you might actually shoot a woodcock while you're there as well. The Douglas County Forest, that's as good a clue as I'm going to give you. Pack extra batteries for your GPS, put a bell on your dog. Be aware of the fact that there are a few wolves up there. Nothing to speak of in terms of bad stories yet, but you should know that, full disclosure. The habitats rank. But the joy of that country is they cut a lot of little paths through them for people like you and me and the snowmobilers in the wintertime, and that's the joy of this land is your land. Go out and take advantage of it. All right, I hope you will watch the show. Wing Shooting USA is the name of the television program. This time of year, it's on Destination America and American Heroes channels. Those are both Discovery networks, and you can just Google that if you'd like more information, or you can get the exact times and dates at scottlindenoutdoors.com. It's time for our listener question. Congratulations, Andy Upwards answered the question last week. What shotgun bore is not measured in gauge, but rather is in caliber? And we all know that's a 410, and it is a sweet shooting gun if you get the right patterning down to it. It's gotten a, you know, kind of a bad rap. But Andy Upwards, you have won a Cabela's collapsible dog bowl, so I'll be sending that out very soon. This week, the question is a little bit more focused. In the dog field trial world, not the ammunition world, what does AA signify? If you know the answer, send it to me at scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com. One of you, chosen at random from all the correct answers, will win a Quail Forever commemorative Browning knife, bone-handled knife, inlaid Bob White quail in there, and a very handy device to keep in your hunting vest. Well, it's been a great show. I hope you've enjoyed it. I sure have. Appreciate your paying attention. Thank you for all your questions at the website and at the scottlindenoutdoors@gmail.com place. You know what I mean. Remember to tell your friends. Appreciate your listening. And thank you so much for being a part of the Upland Nation.